We do not expect the casually dressed tough peacock next to us to be a secret agent. Every keystroke you make on your computer becomes a sickle-shaped claw left in your neck.
Today on Arts and Letters, we'll be talking with poet Terry Wright, whose book, Graphs, published by Kairos Editions in 2008, and chapbook, Fractal Cut-Ups from Cattywampus Press in 2011, demonstrate the organic heuristics of mashing up data and internet search strings to produce prose poetry, such as this excerpt from the Fractal Cut-Ups poem, Under Raptors.
Without North American relatives, you cannot tell the eavesdroppers from the skeletons. Even with a pocket edition of the Constitution. Oh, really? Cable got it that wrong?
Arts and Letters, Graphs, and Fractal Cut-Ups with Terry Wright. I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and welcome to Arts and Letters, a program providing opportunities for the celebration of the arts and humanities. Today, we'll be talking with poet Terry Wright, whose books and chapbooks include What the Black Box Said, Makeover, Safe House, No More Nature, and Fun and No Fun. His most recent chapbooks, Graphs and Fractal Cut-Ups, are text cut-ups, mashups, data-esque word collages using formulas limited to words and phrases found in text fields.
Now, some people have said I'm a slam poet, but I'm not, really, I'm not. But I am very theatrical. I want you to hear the poem. I don't believe that style is everything and substance is nothing. I mean, the poems matter, but you have to hear them right. If you can't understand them, at least you can feel them.
Terry Wright, poet, dean of the College of Fine Arts and Communications at the University of Central Arkansas, who believes his sunrise can beat up yours. Welcome.
Thank you, Brad. By the way, My Sunrise Can Beat Up Yours is based on an image I did in about 2004. I just like that phrase, My Sunrise Can Beat Up Yours.
So it was an image. What kind of an image?
It was a digital image, original art image.
How does a sunrise beat up another sunrise?
It's a conceptual thing.
Let's begin with your 2008 collection, Graphs. How did you come to create it?
I was thinking a lot about mathematics, which I was never particularly good in, but still fascinated me. To me, both a graph and a poem can be a device to display visual data.
You write a different variety of graphs, namely an intersection graph.
Just do it. Your rave's no secret. I read it on the net. A fluke of ecstasy, then gone with a whoosh.
An animal graph.
I wonder while scraping ptomaine off a chicken. Back in the egg, cells divide up the tab. Lunch is in me.
A neo-humanist graph.
Godlessness is dead, but even the underworld recycles. Each sin must be placed in its own colorful asbestos bin.
A snow angel graph.
You've been busy. I know. Making salads.
And the first poem in the collection, Garbage Graph.
How apropos. The chorus returns like another holiday. The family's coming for festival. They're bringing Dionysus, god of wine and theater.
Okay, so in order to understand this poem just a little bit, help us with some of the basics. Who is Dionysus?
Dionysus was the god of revelries, basically. Wine, but also theater. I was thinking about this in terms of what we discard, in terms of garbage, but at the same time, a sort of reveling in it.
Graphs often take the form of diagrams that show a relationship, sometimes functional.
There's a cop in the wings.
Between two sets.
The bell rings announcing locker searches. The bell rings announcing locker searches.
No one can climb the P.E. row. Dimming her off-white decor, the homecoming float bores even the head cheerleader. No student council to string streamers. No suggestion box to retool. Churches pray for the chance to choose books that can't be read.
In that little section, what do you imagine to be two sets?
Police state, church state. You've got the cop in the wings, you've got the locker searches, totalitarianism. Running up against that is the student council, the things in school. Later on, of course, in the poem, locker searches start.
Generally, these sets take the form of points or numbers, but here, other relationships are displayed as vertices.
To confess, the king meets the press. He's Oedipus gone grunge and being grilled. He's got a slacker jester and wears shades on TV. His creed? No more dumb blonde jokes.
Okay, so we have the old meets the new here?
Yeah, the myth meets the reality in some way.
And the edges tie together in context, whether social.
Stupid is as stupid does. What a doll, thinks the public mind.
I love your new pink outfit.
But the newest Barbie is cast with white jackboots.
Awesome!
Ken flunks his drug test.
Not to worry.
Zero tolerance for plastic rules.
Oh, you're so cool.
Starting tonight, the disco ball gleams like an LED moon.
Barbie, is that you?
So you play a little bit with cliché, too. It's as if you comment on the cliché and then you layer it.
The cliché becomes an ironic distancing to sort of reflect on political, social, and cultural motifs.
Okay, so let's listen to a political moment.
I made my mistakes, but in all of my years of public life, I have never profited from public service.
Bad news is first and leads. Mr. President, Mr. President, will you resign?
I have never obstructed justice.
Or crank up your appeal machinery.
Because people have got to know whether or not their president is a crook. Well, I'm not a crook. I've earned everything I've got.
The chalk outline of our leader answers President, without screaming. Now, all bets are off base. Here's the facts. Lyle and Eric walk, even recline. Snooze through their verdict like a rerun, like an annotated soap.
Weather cultural.
Stay tuned for Dad's a Mess. What he must see when he undresses.
Or philosophical.
Look cool when no one asks you to dance.
Just like that.
Yawn at the stupid stars overhead. Hey! It's your world to blow off.
It makes me laugh. So in graphs, you display a multitude of graphs like garbage graph, which we just heard. What I find most fascinating is in the back of the book, you provide extensive notes that also seem to be masquerading as poems. Tell us just a little about the creation of the notes.
Now, the notes to me are also another kind of cut up or mashup that takes texts from mass culture and media and internet culture. They are deliberately a paradox. They provide a kind of mishmash annotation. They're part above board endnote academic documentation. They're part gossip and paranoia that I've pulled out of the web. And sometimes they're part, avowedly at least, confessional secrets and sound bites directly from the author.
That book came out as the first, I think, the first of my collections. And was very successful.
And so you're playing a little bit with academic.
You can't really tell whether I'm serious or not.
But you didn't make any of these up.
Oh, no. Okay. I pulled them directly off of the internet and then mashed them up together.
Okay, so let's use these notes to uncover the origins, for instance, in one of the beginning lines in Garbage Craft.
The chorus returns like another holiday.
Okay, so let's hear the notes on that.
I am thinking of the bird girls in the musical Seussical if the show had been staged on a landfill.
Okay. right. So help us understand.
Basically, what I would do oftentimes for the notes, I'd put a search phrase into Google from the line, like chorus returns like a holiday. And then this would come up, something like this, or a reference to the music Seussical. And then I would throw in a landfill. In a sense, it was just a way of looking at it as a kind of cultural reference that I then discard and literally throw away.
So the line, the family's coming for the festival.
I said it was more like Landru's Fete from Star Trek's The Return of the Archons rather than Burning Man.
Shall come to the playa.
They're coming for the festival, but it's not this revelry like Burning Man. It's this very cold, if you're familiar with that Star Trek episode, of course, it's very totalitarian in some way. And Landru is this thing that absorbs your identity and you become an automaton.
Landru seeks tranquility.
Here's the thing, though. It is a parody of academic notes.
Note.
Am I saying that as a kind of scholar that's researched this or done it?
Note.
Or is this just my opinion?
Note.
Or is it just some lie that some anonymous person, user 892, put on the internet and it's not true at all?
Note.
Note.
It doesn't matter.
Did you do them as endnotes for a reason instead of footnotes?
Yes. I didn't want to really disrupt the poems on the page. Except I've had a number of people, I've submitted the books and stuff before I published Fractal Cutups in particular. People would go, I like this, but I hate the notes. And they'd say, if you remove the notes, I'll publish it. And I said, no.
Well, why didn't they like the notes?
I don't know. They just said, the notes are very distracting and I can't tell if they're serious or not.
I hate the notes.
And I went, yes, exactly.
So when you researched these notes, did you research the notes on the notes?
No. If it was on the internet, I assumed it was truthy.
Truthy.
And I pulled it out and stuck it in.
Ouch.
And sometimes it's just, you know, inane comments, but every once in a while I'll put in a real comment.
Encyclopedia Mythica quote Dionysus, those in Dionysius returns to quote, quote.
Tell me, I'll read a line, and there'll be a line in the poem, and I'll go.
That could be you.
And now, am I serious or not? Well, it could be you, but how do I know?
Having been a school teacher, I didn't know there were such things as smart lockers.
Yes, locker searches. Yes, new smart lockers, like many motels, use swipe cards instead of locks and are tied to the school's central computer system. Records are kept as to when and how often students access their lockers.
Very telling. The notes. Homecoming float bores.
Yes, I put that search into Google, and this story came up, an actual story, and it's from the Western Kentucky University Herald, their school newspaper, from 11909. And I quote, a fire burned half of an award-winning homecoming float in tonight's parade when the right headlight of a fake car on the float sparked. Literally, the
float went up.
The float went up in smoke. Choose books that can't be read. I often, sometimes when I would do these searches, I'd end up in comment sections of web pages. And this was a comment on EntertainmentWeekly.com and a story called Celebrating Banned Books Week. 10309 user Kate wrote this. To Kill a Mockingbird was one of my favorite books in junior high, and I remember being shocked when my English teacher told us that it sat at the top end of a banned books list.
You know what a compromise is?
The entire concept of banned books I found perplexing, but then I saw Footloose. So apparently, some things do deserve to be banned, according to Kate.
Can't ever read anymore.
And for those of us aware of the 90s, Oedipus gone grunge.
Well, he did, after all.
He did.
Do his own piercings.
You're listening to Arts and Letters with poet Terry Wright. According to author David Schneiderman, Terry Wright's Graphs takes the paradigm of data presentation from 100,000 American boardrooms and corporate meeting spaces and unmakes it back into its lowly constituent element, words. How did you feel about the word lowly constituent element? Well, it's just cute because of the way it was.
I actually like that comment a lot because, you know, if you think about a visual projection of data, to me, I mean, that's a graph that you would show in a PowerPoint presentation for some informational purpose in a boardroom, but it's also a definition of poetry.
Poetry is a form of literature that uses aesthetic and rhythmic qualities of language, such as phone aesthetics.
Which is also a visual representation of data.
Data, facts, and statistics collected.
So to me, I love Schneiderman's comment of sort of removing that occupational ambiance from the graph and reducing it back down to the original. And in the beginning, there was the word.
I think my favorite poem in that collection is Corporate Graph. Tell us a little bit about Corporate Graph. Is it one that people talk about?
It seems to be one of the most popular pieces in the book. I mean, a lot of people have written me about it. Corporate Graph is certainly the most political poem.
So would you just read the poem?
Yeah. Corporate Graph. Debt is like the death of someone you don't miss. You feel an absence without the clutter of remorse.
How much is this about hierarchy?
Graphs was written as a response to the Clinton years.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Yeah. Whereas fractal cutups was a response to the Bush years.
Fool me once. Shame on you. Boom, we can't get fooled again.
But what I find fascinating about Corporate Graph, with all of the tax cuts and et cetera that has gone on under Republican legislation, Corporate Graph just seems more and more relevant as time goes on. CEOs ask rhetorical, not ethical questions, just good management sense to cut up workers like a chain pizza.
Pizza, pizza, pizza. Pizza.
You find a lot of the internet search strings you pull up are innately political?
Yes.
Why do you think that is?
I think because I'm interested in political, social, and cultural aspects. Hold boardroom discourse on pushing burgers in Red Square. Cry over dropping the bomb on paper homes. Slap tariffs on even more expensive imports. Then downsize everyone! And then get mad at ads.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
One thing I feel as an artist, I have an obligation to witness the times I live in. Extolling the impact on falling prices. But life almost goes on. Now, I don't want to write polemical poetry. That's just a diatribe. But I also don't think I can turn a blind eye to what's going on in the society politically. Vodka consumption skyrockets. You move your lips with treaty sincerity while singing karaoke. Missiles are cheap and common as pencils. And you are easily erasable. In fact, if I don't, as a poet, witness what's going on in the times I live in, who's going to? We only have two other options, the media and the historians. I trust the historians more than the media, especially contemporary mass media. But nonetheless, I think that the poets have a place in this triumvirate to represent the times they live in. And Homer and Chaucer and other classicists, certainly Shakespeare, tells us a lot about the political climate of the times he lived in. Fire in the hole, barks a dog soldier, human shield before smothering a ticking remote. I think poets absolutely have this responsibility. So many of my poems have political tinges in them. It's not surprising then, when I do the searches to make the mashup notes, that politics comes up quite frequently. From the notes, ticking remote. Is this a finger on the trigger deal or a chore for St. Bernard? David Mellison writing on Engadget 2405 about an electronic whistle tag device that, quote, helps you find your lost remote simply by whistling. When everything, including art, becomes corporate, so I mean, when the corporate display of art becomes institutionalized, it's not quite a grassroots kind of thing. taking a change of scene after one decisive click.
Reboot!
Until another perfect business major daydreams of tax cuts during a sociology class. And so Corporate Graph is a reaction to try to warn people about this kind of phenomenon. What can happen if it goes unchecked? Someone you don't miss might rehire you to clean up their mess.
I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and you're listening to Arts and Letters. Let's return to mashups and fractal cutups as we continue our conversation with poet Terry Wright.
In the fractal, there is no death. When I got to fractal cutups, it was strictly collage. I took two blocks of text off the internet or out of books or something, and then I put them into a virtual text mashup machine that I found on William Burroughs' site, actually. And then I would mash them up and mash them up and mash up the mashups, print them out, and use a highlighter to mark things. And then I would print them out again, cut up the cutups over and over, and then I would compose them. So everything was limited to the original two text fields. This next piece was a mashup of a text on Mickey Mouse, the history of Mickey Mouse, and a text on the biography of Mickey Rourke. The poem's called Mickey One.
Mickey Mouse.
I could tell them how I fought my way out of a cult. How I sat through screenplays with a secret handshake. Being a cartoon creation, whether drawn by hand or by life, was the highlight of high school. The manager praised my velvet pants.
Nice pants!
Red, of course. The shapes of my platoons. The knockdowns for show. In faded Florida. Mickey One, first of all, is the title of a Warren Beatty movie.
What'd you walk me into?
But then I thought, well, what Mickeys can I ram together? Well, Mickey Mouse and then Mickey Rourke.
I met Warren Beatty one time. I thought this.
In a way, they're both similar because Rourke spent a long time boxing in Florida. He quit acting for a while and he became a boxer in Florida.
Sort of. I didn't have a chip on my shoulder. I had a bald.
So he got knocked down repeatedly. Well, so did Walt Disney when he was trying to build his Orlando theme park.
I'm not labeling anything as educational. It's all entertainment.
He got knocked down repeatedly too. I mean, they told him Mickey Mouse the cartoon would never work. Of course, it worked spectacularly for him. I felt overshadowed by talkies. Note, facing bankruptcy, Disney decided to stake everything upon his talking mouse after hearing the songs and dialogue of L. Jolson's The Jazz Singer in 1927.
Wonderful pals are always hard to find.
So I started to see these strange correspondences in Baudelaire's phrase between Rourke and Disney and Mickey Mouse. And so I thought, what happens if I smash them all together? What do I get?
I don't particularly care for actors. I don't like them.
We just sort of base our stories on nature, and out of it does come something that...
I locked myself in a box office with no concessions. I am untouchable under glass posters. I have no apprentices and no animation for 40 pages. Artistic success is my nightmare. What I wanted to do is to see if I could write a kind of poetry that used fractal geometry. It had those characteristics of fractal geometry. It'd be a kind of verbal fractal. Face down with compressed cheekbones in Miami Beach backwash, I found myself an amateur canvas kisser until I met the Pope on a Mexican steamboat. He said, "Yoo-hoo!" to every rumpled patron aboard. But me, his dog with Parvo, slipped me a password. I felt overshadowed by talkies. I locked myself in a box office with no concessions. That will kill the giants. In the fractal, there is no death.
I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and you're listening to Arts and Letters. Let's return to poet Terry Wright. as he reads from one final poem, Under Raptors.
We do not expect the casually dressed, tough peacock next to us to be a secret agent. Every keystroke you make on your computer becomes a sickle-shaped claw left in your neck. The two texts mashed are one, an article about the hunting habits of velociraptors, with two, an essay about the Patriot Act granting U.S. federal agencies increased police powers for surveillance. Ashcroft, like a pack of emus, trolls for herbivores after caching Hoover files of people who lack war-hating. Your 1956 lapdog is a journalist with tropical feathers whose free exercise of assembly rips out bellies and actually believes in libraries. Dolphins are way out! But your velociraptor is a much smarter true believer. How can you tell one from a Republican? There are beasts among us, and I believe everything I see on the big hidden screen.
Broadcast from the University District, this has been a special program on KUAR 89.1. Thanks for joining us. Arts and Letters and other programming that airs on this station can be found at KUAR.org. Leave us a comment there and let us know what you've thought about the program. Also check out the supplemental section of the webpage for the show for more graphs and fractal poetry. Thank you to Donovan Suit with Rural War Room, who wrote the score and supplied the music, Graphs Mashups, and General Mayhem for the show. Thank you to Know Who's a Robot for the ambient fractal cut-up music. A special thanks to artists Shannon McClung, John Burnett, and the St. Mark Baptist Choir. As always, a special thank you to Mary Ellen Cubitt. This program was made possible by generous funding from the Arkansas Humanities Council and the National Endowment for the Humanities. Thank you to the sound genius of Chris Hickey,
who helps us
to produce these shows. Thank you to poet Terry Wright, whose innovative use of language enables us to hear the juxtapositions between technology and text.
This is what got me thinking about it, and it was actually the poet Alice Fulton. She talks about fractal poetry. She has a phrase, fractal poetry. Now, she wants a poetics that could trace and make a visible third space that she describes as the non-binary in-between. So, oh, I love that. And I thought, maybe that's where these poems on the threshold of structure are, you know, tucked somewhere between the zeros and ones of binary code.
For Arts and Letters, I'm J. Bradley Minnick, leaving us with the words of William S. Burroughs. After one look at this planet, you can pretty it up, cut it up, scramble it. It will reassemble in the same form.